Признайся мені, звідки в тебе ті чари? Я без тебе всі дні у полоні печалі. Може, десь у лісах ти чар зілля шукала, сонце руту знайшла і мене зчарувала. Бачу я тебе в снах, у дібровах зелених, по забутих стежках, ти приходиш до мене, і не треба нести мені квітку надії, бо давно уже ти увійшла в мої мрії. Червону руту не шукай вечорами, ти у мене єдина, тільки ти, повір, бо твоя врода, то є чиста вода, то є бистра вода, синий.
From Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, that was Teresa Sekutica from her CD Ukrainian Roots, and a song that could possibly be considered the anthem of Ukrainian pop culture these days, Chervona Ruta, written by Volodymyr Ivasyuk, and that means, of course, the Red Rue. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос». Говорить Павліна Макварі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there, and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie, your host in Ukrainian, Pavlina, and thank you so much for tuning in, and a very warm welcome to you, Vitayu. This past week, November 21st to 27th, was, of course, Holodomor Remembrance Week across Canada, and this is a week in which the Ukrainian community invites the world to join in commemorating this horrific human tragedy in which 7 to 10 million Ukrainians were deliberately starved to death in the forced famine of 1932 to 33 in Ukraine, which is known as the Holodomor, or death by hunger. Still a relatively unknown genocide, and some still refuse to call it that. Vasil Pavlovsky will discuss the Holodomor on his cultural capsule, and as well we'll have an interview with Oleg Atbashian, a Ukrainian-American author, about his book called Shakedown Socialism, which sheds some light on what led up to the Holodomor. On Ukraine News Outlook, Keith brings us reports of a free trade agreement with Europe and protests marking the 7th anniversary of the Orange Revolution. On Ukrainian Food Flair, Sylvia will join us with a recipe for fruit soup. And we'll also have our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and more great Ukrainian music. And up next is a popular tune from the heady and happier days of the Orange Revolution 7 years ago by one of my favorite composers and singers, Viktor Morozov. Here he is now with Oh, My Dear Ukraine.
Цей твій сон не скінчиться ніколи. Ти будеш лиш одна. Твій портрет завбільшки з долоню розтане між хмар, між дивних людей. Чи весело між весняних дощів, погляд твій і розплетені коси розтануть як дим між дивних людей.
Radiocast.ca – це наша адреса в інтернеті. Українська радіопрограма з Ванкувера «Четверта хвиля».
Ukrainian programming – the fourth wave from the Burnaby Mountain.
Ми виходимо на хвилі 91 FM в Ванкувері. Також ловіть наш потік через вебсайт cjsf.ca.
And that was the Ukrainians from Leeds, England, from their second CD, Vorone, and a song called Shche Raz, which means once again. And that is a rather patriotic song about remembering and honoring the native land of Ukraine. Coming up next is a Canadian composer and classical guitarist from Waterloo, Ontario, by the name of Stephen Zurakowski. And a few years back, he released a CD called The Four Trees of Winter. And this CD is dedicated to the souls affected by the Great Ukrainian Famine of 1932-33. And many of the songs were original compositions that served to help him work through some of his own issues. And this song coming up next, though, is a traditional Ukrainian folk song, and he has a few of them on this CD. This one, which, by the way, you can get at his website, anumi.ca, that's A-N-U-M-I.ca. And here he is now with Kolomeika, Dance in E Minor. Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. Cold soups made from fresh and dried fruits are served as a first course in parts of Ukraine and as a dessert farther north. Some are like a very liquid compote with the fruit left whole or cut into pieces. Others are pureed. Either way, they are very refreshing soups. Get your pans ready for assorted dried fruit soup. You'll need the following ingredients: 3/4 pound assorted dried fruits, 1/2 stick cinnamon, 6 cups water, 1/4 to 1/2 cup sugar or to taste, juice of 1/2 lemon, and a little grated lemon rind. Wash the fruit in warm water. Cover the fruit and cinnamon stick with 6 cups of cold water. Cook over low heat until the fruit is tender. Remove the fruit and press it through a sieve into a serving bowl. Add sugar to the juice and bring to a boil. Stir in the lemon juice and then mix with the pureed fruit. Chill thoroughly. Serve with grated lemon rind. This recipe serves about 6. Treat your taste buds. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio.
Hey, у лузі червона калина похилилася. Чогось наша славна Україна зажурилася. А ми тую червону калину підіймемо, а ми нашу славну Україну гей-гей розвеселимо. А ми тую червону калину підіймемо, а ми нашу славну Україну і розвеселимо.
Pavlovsky, and this is Cultural Capsule, especially for Nash Holos. The fourth Saturday of November and the week which precedes it is recognized by Ukrainians worldwide as a week to remember a tragic event in the history of the Ukrainian people, an event which was the responsibility of Joseph Stalin, Lazar Kaganovich, Vyacheslav Molotov, and 4 others. It was due to their policies and actions that the period from 1932 to 1933 is known to Ukrainians as the Holodomor, which quite literally translates to mean to kill by the means of starvation. The Holodomor was Stalin's response to those villagers in Ukraine who were against his collectivization policies, which began in 1930, and it had 2 goals. Firstly, to force villagers into the collectivization system, and to secondly, break the class and national resistance and consciousness of the Ukrainian people. On September 11, 1932, Stalin wrote to Lazar Kaganovich, his right-hand man on collectivization, and I quote, "If we don't take control of the situation in Ukraine today, we could lose Ukraine. Set as your goal to convert Ukraine into a true fortress of the USSR in the shortest period possible. Don't worry about the money." End of quote. In short, the letter to Kaganovich, giving him carte blanche to do whatever necessary in order to gain control over Ukraine at any cost. And the cost of meeting their goals were millions of human lives. Documents used in the case of the State Security Service of Ukraine against the organizers of the Holodomor determined that 3,941,000 died directly from hunger, not to mention the additional resulting demographic loss of over 6 million people. One of my neighbors was an 8 to 10-year-old schoolgirl being raised by her father living in Kiev during that period. She grew up near where the Golden Gate Monument stands on Volodymyrska Street today. I remember her telling me how she and her father survived on meagerly rations, of how she witnessed through the window of their home corpses and those close to death being carted away to God knows where on a daily basis, and how by the spring of 1933, there were no domestic animals at all to be found in Kyiv. On November 28, 2006, the Parliament of Ukraine ratified the law of Ukraine on the Holodomor of 1932-33, which recognized the events of the period as a genocide. To date, 23 countries of the world have also recognized the Holodomor as an act of genocide against the Ukrainian people. I'm Vasily Pavlovsky, and this week's Cultural Capsule featured the Holodomor. Let us all remember its victims and its survivors.
Смерть прийшла смерть, на порозі стала, годі вдова гуляти, пора уже вмирати, годі вдова гуляти, пора уже вмирати. Іди смерте, іди прощ, головеньки не морож, бо я часу не маю, бо за стями гуляю. Бо я часу не маю, бо за стями гуляю. Ой, пішла смерть, плачучи до Бога. Ой, не можна вдови взять, гуляє небога. Ой, не можна вдови взять, гуляє небога.
You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Ukrainian News Outlook.
Coming up in this edition, Ukraine to sign free trade agreement with the European Union, and protests mark the 7th anniversary of the Orange Revolution. I'm Keith Perron. The trade negotiations between Ukraine and the European Union have been riding on a very rocky road since the prison sentence was handed down to the former president Yulia Tymoshenko. But it seems that a trade deal worth millions will soon become a reality before the end of the year. Alexandra Molokolop has the story.
Ukraine is set to sign a free trade agreement with the EU by the end of the year. Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych has said it aims to modernize the country and implement reforms. In the meantime, authorities have signed trade deals with Russia and other CIS countries, which according to the government will provide $1.2 billion in 2012, along with additional 2.2% GDP growth.
Investors will be interested in placing their production on our territory, as the level of technology and personnel is quite high here.
The deal does not apply to grain, sugar, oil, gas and metal, the goods which would have benefited Ukraine. It favors Ukrainian confectionery and machines, which are among the country's main export items. Therefore, the document was signed on Russian conditions, as Moscow is seeking to increase its influence in the region ahead of the 2012 presidential election.
Russia aims to draw Ukraine closer to its sphere of influence. Russia also creates as many as possible unions in the region in order to increase its control over the CIS countries.
However, signing the agreement for a free trade zone with the EU has been a top priority for the Ukrainian government. Both experts and officials believe the agreement with the CIS countries is not a hindrance to the conclusion of a similar document with the EU.
It is clear now that Ukraine will never be part of the customs union that is also to remove all barriers to trade, capital and labor movement among its members from next year.
Ukraine has been seeking to sign the agreement with the EU till the year end during the Ukraine-EU summit in Kyiv. Experts predict cold atmosphere during the meeting due to the long-standing dispute over the trial and imprisonment of former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko and also the demand for an EU accession promise ahead of the summit.
This can jeopardize long-awaited approach with the EU. I think authorities will not ratify the treaty until after the reforms of justice and public administration are speed up.
Experts say with its 260 million people, the CIS market is of great importance for Ukraine. Also, free trade agreement with Europe would be a big breakthrough for Ukraine's industry. So Kyiv has not lowered expectations despite the skeptical mood about putting this issue off during the upcoming summit in December. Experts say that Ukrainian authorities fully realize that in the meantime, Ukraine's EU membership prospects are closed in mist due to the European financial crisis. So the government will only press for the free trade agreement ratification without heeding EU calls for democracy. Oleksandra Molodkova, Kyiv.
Police on Tuesday fenced off the epicenter of the 2004 Orange Revolution as anti-government protesters breached a ban on rallies to mark the 7 years since the popular uprising amid growing political tensions. Around 1,000 Orange Revolution supporters came to Kyiv's Independence Square, where tens of thousands had gathered daily on November 22, 2004. To contest the results of the rigged elections held the day before. Hundreds of riot police stood on guard as protesters wearing orange ribbons and scarves, carrying portraits of the Orange Revolutionary leader Yulia Tymoshenko. Helen Rossman of Deutsche Welle has the details.
It's a far cry from the Orange Revolution. 7 years on, the remnants of Ukraine's pro-democracy movement gathered in Independence or Maidan Square. But with an anniversary protest banned, police moved into the iconic site in Kyiv. The loser in the uprising against rigged elections, Viktor Yanukovych, is now president. But he should still fear Ukraine's revolutionary spirit, according to this opposition deputy, as Maidan ruined him in 2004, he says, Maidan will ruin him in the future. The Orange Movement today is in tatters. One of its leaders, Yulia Tymoshenko, has been jailed for abuse of office in what she says is a political vendetta. But some still believe. I'm here because I do not think that our Orange Revolution was betrayed. I think everything depends on us. My attitude towards the Orange Revolution is positive in general. The consequence of it is a different matter. However, all that happened at that time was a positive shift in our society. Our correspondent in Kyiv says people who've gathered in Maidan to celebrate the anniversary of the Orange Revolution have been met with riot police. While Yulia Tymoshenko is still in jail, tensions seem to be on the rise in the country.
And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of Ukraine News Outlook. I'm Keith Pahom.
Land of plenty, please tell me if it's true. Land of plenty, what did they do to you? Land of plenty, they stripped your wheat fields bare. Land of plenty, as if you were not there. Land of plenty, they stripped your wheat fields bare. Land of plenty, as if you were not there. Land of plenty, your people lived off you. But it started in 1932. Land of plenty, your people you could feed. But that year you were robbed for foreign greed. Land of plenty, your people you could feed. But that year you were robbed for foreign greed. Land of plenty, your people could not eat. Satan's soldiers collected all your wheat. In the name of an ideology that was written to give equality. In the name of an ideology that was written to give equality. Land of plenty refused the right to give, and Ukraine was refused the right to live. Land of plenty, as if you were not there. Land of plenty, the harvests of despair. Land of plenty, as if you were not there. Land of plenty, the harvests of despair. Land of plenty, 2 years with empty hands, and the world still refused to understand that your nation just wanted to be free. Land of plenty of 1933. Yes, your nation just wanted to be free. Land of plenty of 1933.
You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
I came across a very interesting book called Shakedown Socialism. Now, it's a bit of a controversial title. It's a controversial topic. We're talking political ideology. But it was written by an author on the premise that he has lived in a system that many protesters in North America these days seem to be calling for. And he definitely does not agree with them. His name is Oleg Atbashian. He is from Ukraine, and he is now an American citizen. Oleg joins me now from his home in Florida. Thanks so much for coming on, Oleg.
You're welcome, Polina, and thanks for inviting me.
Now, you're originally from Ukraine. Whereabouts?
I was born and raised in the city of Cherkasy, which is right in the very center of Ukraine, on the river Dnieper. It's about 100 miles down from Kyiv. Pretty good place to grow up. I grew up speaking Russian and Ukrainian together because like half of the people spoke Russian, half Ukrainian. There was kind of little conflict in that area. Although right now, of course, switching to the Ukrainian language completely, there is probably one Russian language school left in the whole area. But it wasn't fair to Ukrainians before when the policy of Russification was going on. So I guess a little pushback in the other direction won't hurt. Of course, any radical changes, may bring unpredictable results.
So you moved to the States when?
In 1994. And I visited the United States first in 1990. And some people suggested that I should stay. But I was telling them that Ukraine is going to be independent soon, and it will be a great country to live in. It'll just join the European community and be like any other European country. The life would be good. And then Ukraine did get independence, but instead of all the economic prosperity that I expected, instead, what happened is the wholesale theft of everything that the country had by the ruling elites, and impoverishment and unemployment and economic crisis and hyperinflation. And that's when I decided to leave, because as much as I loved that country, I just had only one life to live. So I moved to the United States. And I also wanted to learn more about a way of life where there is liberty and opportunity and less government regulation, and see how that works. I didn't expect to find so many people who would be sympathetic with the socialist system. I was surprised at first, and I thought it was just a funny quirk and a little bit laughable, but of a little consequence. But right now, as we can see, it's no longer laughable. We look at the Occupy Wall Street protests, and it's a pretty dangerous situation, and unfortunately people do not realize what socialism really means and how it not only destroys the economy and even the environment, but it also destroys the human nature itself. It is detrimental to human dignity and to relationships between people. And that is why I started writing.
Now, you equate socialism with communism?
Not exactly, because socialism, according to classical Marxism, is only a stage through which the society must go in order to achieve communism. In Karl Marx's theory, the people who grew up in the capitalist system would not be able to live in a communist society because they wouldn't be ready for it. Their minds would not be prepared. They would not be those ultimate altruists. So socialism was supposed to be the transitional period during which the new man would grow up, who would be able to live in a communist society. Of course, that new man never appeared, and the 70 years of this experiment in the USSR has shown that's just an impossible thing, and human nature cannot be changed. Now, there are other versions of socialism, of course. People call Europe a socialist system, but, of course, it's not at all Marxist. Then we had national socialism in Germany. Fascism in Italy was also a variety of socialism. So there are all different kinds of it, and also like a mix between socialism and capitalism that exists right now in a lot of Western countries. It can also be, in a way, called socialism.
And have you explained and described these different types of socialism in your book?
Not in my book. That is something I'm talking about during the book presentations on my book tours. But I'm thinking about writing a book about that. That should probably be my next project.
Uh-huh. So would you consider that before 1990 or 91, when Ukraine became independent, was it socialism or communism in the Soviet Union?
Oh, no. Communism has never been built, ever. Again, according to Marx's theory, it's a society of the future where there would be no money, no government, no family, and something that cannot exist when the rest of the world lives according to the old rules of capitalism. So in order for communism to exist, the entire world needs to have a communist revolution, or at least all the countries all over the world must be socialist so that communism could start growing. The state is supposed to gradually wither away, and so is the private property and the family. So there is this confusion, basically, when they talk about communism right now. It's the idea, it's the ideology, the final goal of like a communist party, for instance. But that in strict sense, communism has never been built, and I don't think it can even exist. It's contradictory to human nature.
So what do you say to people who say that socialism didn't really get a fair shake, that there were, you know, monsters like Stalin and Pol Pot who messed it up? And if it weren't for them, then, you know, socialism really would work. There are people that believe that, and you're saying that that's wrong.
Right. Communism, I mean, China and the USSR were communist countries only in the sense that they were run by a communist party. It was a one-party system, a dictatorship, whose goal was to build communism. So they called themselves, those were communist parties, but officially the system under which they lived was called socialism. That idea is more like an optical illusion. It's very alluring to a lot of people. They think it's such a great society to live in, and it's so great that you can sacrifice your property or somebody else's property or even a life for somebody else's life or a group of people to it, and it's a still small price to pay to achieve that great utopian ideal. And then the price becomes bigger and bigger, and eventually it becomes a whole class of people, and then sometimes even an entire ethnic group that needs to be sacrificed for this greater goal.
That sequence of events describes what happened with the Holodomor in 1932.
Yes, yes. They sacrificed the entire ethnic group, the Ukrainians, to this ideological necessity to have industrialization and collectivization. And for that great goal, they had to take away things from the rich farmers whom they called the Kulaks, or in Ukrainian it was the Kurkul. But in the West it's known as the Kulaks. So they had to eliminate the Kulaks as a class. And the rich farmers were usually those who were more productive, more knowledgeable, more industrious, who knew how to do business, basically good business people. And on the one hand, they needed to create the collectivization and suppress the opposition, because of course the farmers wouldn't want to just give up their property and their perspectives and their, you know, the inheritance of their children. So they fought, and the government took away all their property and shipped them off to Siberia or just shot them if they were trying to hide food. And then the entire region starved. Every time there is an effort to redistribute wealth, there will be the opposition. So that opposition needs to be suppressed. And somehow that part is never mentioned in all those rosy, beautiful schemes that the proponents of economic equality and socialism describe to us. They never mention that when people do not want to share their property with others, those people need to be eliminated or imprisoned or something else. But that's an inevitable result. So on the one hand, that famine in Ukraine was organized because people were sacrificed to this idea of collectivization of farm labor. One of the other reasons was that the government needed the money for its industrialization campaign that was happening concurrently. And so it sold all the food from Ukraine abroad. And with that money, they bought equipment to build factories. It was mostly bought from Germany, so the entire Nazi Germany was working over time to build those turnkey factories for the Soviet Union. And when somebody tells me that socialism is efficient because look how fast Stalin was able to industrialize the country and the supposedly backward country, as the former USSR, and how... remember the fact that Germany was fulfilling orders from the USSR, and those were pretty big orders. And the USSR itself was getting all those factories for industrialization with the money that they stole from the farmers in Ukraine and the Volga region and made people starve to death. So again, they sacrificed groups of people for the common good. They thought it was still a small price to pay for the great idea.
So you must have been surprised then when you came to the States in 1994 and you found it wasn't really a whole lot different from what you left behind.
Oh, yeah, it was. I felt like I had taken a time machine trip from the past into the future because I saw such a great country where it's like was being in a futuristic movie. But now, the more this country is moving towards socialism, the more I'm getting a feeling that I had actually taken a trip in the time machine from the future into the past. Because I know what lies ahead. I know where this country is heading. I've been to that last final stop. And I'm telling, don't go there. I'm trying to warn my American comrades about what lies ahead. It's not actually progress, it's a regress to sort of like a quasi-feudal society where the powerful elites rule over the grateful serfs and provide all the services and protect the peasants. And the peasants are all equal and work for the common good. And that is the system that socialism creates, and that's what the progressives are heading towards. Maybe they don't imagine it like this. They're not cynical enough to do it. Well, some are. I'm sure some of them are pretty crafty and know exactly what they're doing, but a lot of them are just misguided people who are deceived by these optical illusions of economic equality. You know, I knew a lot of jokes, political jokes in the USSR, and I think that humor helped in a big part to bring down that Soviet system. Because you can't argue with a joke, you can't argue with a satirist who shows how absurd that system, that life is under that system. And so a lot of people stopped believing in communism a long time before the Soviet Union collapsed. And that's why it was relatively painless, and there were no riots or no physical resistance to the collapse of the Soviet Union because just nobody believed in that anymore. One of my favorite political jokes was called the Six Contradictions of Socialism in the USSR. And number one, there is no unemployment and yet no one is working. No one is working and yet the production quotas are fulfilled. The production quotas are fulfilled, and yet the stores are empty. The stores are empty, and yet everybody has everything at home. Everybody has everything at home, and yet everybody is unhappy. Everybody is unhappy, and yet the voting is always unanimous.
Wow, wow. So do you think that your message is going to resonate with the people that you feel need to hear it?
It does resonate. A great number of people in America now, more than ever, who are interested in politics, who try to understand for themselves what is really going on, and they learn history, they learn, find out things about economy, and they try to decide what's best. And my book is popular among these people, so the sales are pretty good, and I'm receiving emails, people are thanking me, saying that whatever I write has more impact on them than I will ever know. Even my son's friend called him from Arizona, like a girl who went to school with him, called him and asks him if the author of this book, Oleg Abashian, is his father. He says, yeah, it's my dad. Did he write a book? Yes. Oh, this is such a great book. It opened my eyes. So to hear it from my son's friend is really heartwarming. That is not the only person.
Good for you. Well, it is encouraging that your message is resonating with the reading public, and hopefully that it won't have to go that way and there won't actually be a Holodomor ever again.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, going back to something you mentioned earlier about people saying that socialism never got a fair shake anywhere, they always think there is something wrong with the other people who did it all wrong, but they would do it right. They are the smartest ones because they think they're so smart they would be able to do it correctly. So if it didn't succeed in the USSR, there had to be something wrong with the Russians because the Russians are stupid or they're savages, they're brutal people, or the Ukrainians were also not good enough for socialism. And then the Chinese, probably there was something wrong with the Chinese. Then the Pol Pot and the Kampuchea, you know, Cambodia, they were just also savages. So there's always something wrong with somebody else, but we will do it right.
Do you really think there is a danger of socialism coming to America, the kind that you left?
No, the classical Marxist theory has been modified, and the kind of change that they're making now in the Western societies is not exactly the kind of socialism that I experienced. But it's still, you know, the basic underlying ideas are the same, the idea of economic equality, and which is absurd in itself. This is something that I write about in my book, that economic equality is impossible. Equality that we really need is the equality of opportunity, equality before the law, and all citizens must have equal rights. That's the equality we really need. Economic equality is an absurdity. It's your economic situation is based on your life's work, of course, in some ways on your luck, on your talents, on your industriousness, on your choices in life.
Yeah.
And if you've taken poor choices, don't blame others and don't expect others to support you, because then there will be no incentive not to make poor choices. So anyway, economic equality also reduces human existence to only material factors, and that the material things are important as long as you can have a roof over your head and you don't freeze in the winter and you have food so you don't starve. But anything beyond that is optional.
Yeah.
It's up to you to get.
Yeah.
I wish Ukraine could change its ways and become a free capitalist society, but a generation or two must grow up before that happens. Most people want that change, but the way the things are going and socialism still has its appeal among some people, they may just not realize that they're just going in circles. Without any escape.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program, Oleg, and telling us about your book and your experiences in Ukraine.
Thanks again for inviting me, and you can find my book on Amazon if you look up Shakedown Socialism. It's also on Kindle in electronic format. And you can also order it from me autographed from my website, shakedownsocialism.com. And you can also read about me and my book and my other work and read my articles also at shakedownsocialism.com.
Okay, well, thank you again, and all the best on your second book.
Thank you.
From a CD put out by the storyteller and lyrinik or hurdy-gurdy player by the name of Sashko, and several generically named little snippets. And earlier in the program, you heard from Ludwig from London, England, and 1933, an original composition about the Holodomor. And earlier in the program, yet was Sonia from Nashville, Tennessee, with a traditional Ukrainian folk song, Chervona Kalena. For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. AM 1320 on the radio dial in Vancouver and online at am1320.com. In Nanaimo on the PCJ Network, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on 101.7 FM and online at chly.ca. Elsewhere, Nash Holos airs on AM, FM, and shortwave radio on the PCJ Radio Network. Podcasts at nashholos.com as well as at pcjmedia.com and on iTunes. На жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Ніяка буря не приносить добра. And our proverb of the week translates as, no storm brings any good. Well, our time is just about up, so to take us to the end of our program, we have Prairie Crocus from Winnipeg and a tune with a timely title, The Liberty Two-Step. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks so much for listening. Till next time, do pobachenya.
One, two, three, four!